more power than expected on small scales. So I'm going to go around in some circles, and the end result is that this excess power is difficult to explain with the Sinyavs-Aldovich effect. Now, this is just sort of an example of the theory challenges that we have in going towards these small scales, because everything up to now is assumed to have been basically a Gaussian random field. And on very small scales, you're not detecting the primary stuff anymore. You're detecting these secondary anisotropies. And the secondary things are not Gaussian. They are somewhat random, and they're not even really a field. You should think of them more as collections of points. So it's a bit of a mess on small scales. So a quick review, where are we right now? Well, so right now, here's the WMAP results from the most recent one. So you can see going up to L of 1,000, the primary temperature stuff is very well characterized. What you see down here, there's the TE cross polarization right here. So that's well characterized. Here's the EE power spectrum. So now you can see the error bars are starting to blow up. And down here what you see is what you expect the B-mode power spectrum to be, if it's ever measured someday, for a fairly high tensor to scalar ratio. So there's two parts to this. There's three parts, I guess. There's a reionization bump. There's the gravity wave part. So this is the stuff that's left over from inflation. And this dashed line here is actually more a secondary anisotropy than anything else. What that is the lensing signal, where you've taken this EE part right here, and you just from lensing by stuff along the line of sight, you generate a B-mode. So in many ways, this is talked about as a contamination that has to get cleaned out. But what it also is a very, if it's measured, it will be a very precise normalization of how much lensing has happened between us and the CMB. So there's actually a lot of information in there, and it's something definitely worth going after. So the new frontier is what people are working very hard on doing is in beating down these error bars, pushing these limits down to the point where this becomes a detection, and also pushing out here off the side of the plot. So that's where things are headed. So here's my biased view. Dick showed sort of the plot that had a million different experiments on it. So here's a small subset of the upcoming experiments and exactly where all these things fit in. So just as a roadmap to see where we are. So the primary stuff is right here. So you can see there's this damping tail that comes out here. So the lensing is happening out here. But what you see right here is the thermal Sinyavs-Aldovich effect. So you can see that once you get to L of a few thousand, you're no longer measuring the primary CMB. You're actually measuring out here, you're measuring a secondary anisotropy. And I'll show you in a second that that looks nothing like the CMB. If you push down further, then you'll eventually start hitting the Vishniac effect, which is just scattering by electrons sloshing back and forth along the line of sight. So WMAP is sort of petering out here around the third peak. Planck is going to come way out here, should measure many of these peaks very well. Stuff that's going right now, people that have data in the can that hopefully will tell us something soon, the Sinyavs-Aldovich array, they're sort of out in this L range, and they're down here, so they should image the Sinyavs-Aldovich effect very well. The stuff that Dick was talking about with CBI, they were sort of out here. They weren't quite as sensitive as this, so we'll see where that goes. Stuff that's being built right now are these very large telescopes with basically, you can almost think of them as almost like a CCD. They have cameras in the focal plane with thousands of pixels that are designed to just sort of tile the sky. So three examples here, ACT, SPT, and APEX. So I picked these. So ACT is something which people at Toronto and UBC are involved with, and that's going down in Chile. SPT is the South Pole Telescope, and a significant part of that, the electronics readout stuff, is being built at McGill. And APEX is also something that has a significant McGill involvement. So Canada has a big role in pushing out into this frontier. We're also talking about, so SPT, could eventually get polarized, which would be nice. But then there's a whole raft of experiments that are in this L range, which will be polarization sensitive, but that's a different plot. Okay, so the primary science directions that people are going to go, so reionization in the first stars, Dick talked about this a little bit. Now, in many ways, this is cosmic weather. But in the same sense that I check the weather every morning, this is something that's important to measure, because reionization is directly degenerate with the amplitude of the primary anisotropies. So if you want to really peg down the amplitude very carefully, then you'll need to measure reionization, whether you're interested in star formation or not. So the tensor modes from the gravitational radiation from inflation, this is what the B modes on large scales will hopefully tell us someday. Pegging down the power spectrum is something that obviously they're working on at CETA very hard. Now, the other stuff, the secondary anisotropy, all this stuff up at high L's, what that's telling you is about stuff along the line of sight. So it's telling you about the history of the growth of structure. And when you can measure the history of the growth of structure, what you're measuring is you're measuring the properties of the dark energy. You can measure something about the neutrino masses at some sensitivity. And you can start to look for some hints of some deviations from general relativity on the very largest scales. If dark energy is not dark energy and it's actually something weird about gravity, one of the things you'll need to do is measure the growth of structure. So what do we expect to see as we go to really high L? So if you take the WMAP 1 year picture, which is right here, you see there's a big ball. This is the surface of last scattering, effectively. If you zoom in on sort of a 1 degree or 2 degree patch of this, what you see is what we hope to see is something like this. This is a simulated image of what you would see on the 2 degree by 2 degree patch. You see this large-scale splotchiness, and that's the primary CMB. That's large-scale splotchiness. Measuring the power spectrum of this large-scale splotchiness is what gives you these amazing cosmological constraints. And hopefully what you can also see is that there's a whole raft of little dots. And each one of these dots is a galaxy cluster along the line of sight that's marking a big collection of hot electrons. So on the scale of this, so these things are sort of typically a few arc minutes across, so you need very high resolution to get to a few arc minute few arc minute objects. So that's when you go to this high L frontier, what you're going to see is you're going to see all these little dots. And that's the idea. So one thing you can do is you can identify all these dots and mark the structure along the line of sight and then figure out how fast structure grows. So what are these dots? Well, this is just the Thermalson-Yav-Zeldovich effect. So it's just Compton scattering. So Compton scattering, you have these very hot electrons, sort of KeV energies, and you have the CMB going through, and the CMB is sort of below millielectron volts. So they scatter. When they scatter, they start to thermalize, which means the photons get hotter, the electrons get slightly colder, but the net result is you see a distortion of the CMB. So wherever these little dots, wherever these galaxy clusters are, you'll see a little bit of funniness in the CMB. So there's talk about there possibly being a small-scale anomaly in the microwave background. Everyone has heard a lot, I'm assuming, or at least a lot of people have spent a lot of time talking about the 2-sigma anomaly on the very largest scales. You know, the quadrupole is very low. But there's a comparable discrepancy on very small angular scales, which is that there's something like 2 sigma too much power compared to what you might expect. Now here it's a little bit more complicated because, you know, those dots are clearly not a Gaussian random field, and if that's what's giving you all this power, you have to be careful about exactly how you do the analysis. So let's have a look at this power spectrum. So here's the WMAP power spectrum. So this is from a CBI paper. This box up here is the CBI, so here's the CBI result right here. I can't tell if that's 1 sigma or 2 sigma. Looks like that's the 1 sigma one. So the primary anisotropies alone, you expect something that looks like this. And what this dashed line is right here are estimates of what the Sinyaev-Zeldovich power spectrum looks like. But the key is that in order to generate this, you have to assume something about how much structure there is today, because it's the structure today which is giving you these things. And what they put in was this sigma 8 close to 1 to get this curve up here. This point right here is, I believe, the ACK. I'm going to have to move back here. So ACK bar is also on here, so that's these red points. And you can see that that's also slightly high. These are all sort of slightly above what you expect. And out here are BIMA. So all of these things seem roughly consistent with something, a sigma 8 that's closer to 1 than, say, 0.8 or 0.7. And you could see that if you wanted to push this down by a factor of 2 or something, you'd really be stressing these error bars a lot. So this is sometimes referred to as the CBI excess, but there's really an excess in all of these experiments. So just to put this tension in perspective, so that curve you saw that was just sort of touching those points at a sigma 8 close to 1, from the last WMAP release, here are their constraints on sigma 8 and the neutrino mass. So you know, we know the neutrino masses should be down here, or at least we hope they're down here somewhere. But you can see that sigma 8 of around 0.8 is clearly what's preferred by the WMAP data, and it really doesn't want to go above 0.85. So if you have something that is requiring sigma 8 close to 1, then you're in conflict with this WMAP data. You know, what's the difference? 0.85, 1, is it really such a big deal? Well, that Sinyavsky-Dovich power spectrum goes as sigma 8 to the 7th. So what I'm plotting here is something which is proportional to the CL on these scales. It's not exactly, the amplitude is not the same, but it's directly proportional. You can see that as sigma 8 goes from 0.7 up to 1, you're talking about factors of about 10 in this power. So factors of 10 are a big deal. So it's not like changing, you know, we'll just push sigma 8 down a little bit and everything will be fine. There seems to be a real problem out here in trying to explain such high levels of power entirely with the Sinyavsky-Dovich effect. So, you know, this is 2 sigma and a lot of it's thermal noise. Maybe it's just a noise fluctuation. This high amplitude from SZ is a lower amplitude than you'd expect. And now, one possible escape is that this SZ power is strongly non-Gaussian, right? There are all these little dots. You know, maybe there's just one bright dot in there, or maybe there's a few sort of slightly smudgy dots in there that are not supposed to be there, and that's enough to do everything. So you can sort of estimate exactly what the chances are of just happening to get not, you know, just a little bit unlucky. So this one way to do this is through the trispectrum, which is the Fourier transform, basically, of the four-point function. Now, so how do you get the power spectrum for a collection of points? Well, for a collection of points, you know, imagine you're in the, it's a Fourier transform of a collection of points. So you take one spot in the Fourier domain, you add a bunch of points, and you're just doing a random walk. Each point you add is a random phase. It just does a random walk in the real and imaginary parts. You end up with the Fourier transform of this, so basically CL is just the sum over all your points of this amplitude square. It's just doing a random walk. Similarly, the four-point function, so a four-point function, you're multiplying four things together, but you know, it's just going to go as whatever this Fourier amplitude is of each dot to the fourth power. So because they're not pure dots, they have some actual profile. This becomes slightly L-dependent, but the basic idea is just that it's squared for the power spectrum and to the fourth for this trispectrum. And so you can estimate how much non-Gaussianity you expect, first of all. And the amount of non-Gaussianity you expect is sort of maybe a factor of a few larger than you may naively expect, but not a huge deal. But the thing that's interesting about this is because it's going as this thing to the fourth power, you're hugely skewed towards the brightest objects. So here's a visual way of seeing this. So what I'm plotting here is that L of 2500. These are contours of, so dx by dz d log m, so where x for the black things is the power. So for something like CBI, which is sensitive around L of 2500, the peak contribution of the power is coming from things that are a few 10 to the 14 solar masses and at around a redshift of a half, but there's this very long tail that goes up. On the other hand, this non-Gaussianity, this trispectrum, is getting almost all of its weight from these, so that's what this blue is, from out here at a few 10 to the 15 solar masses at slightly lower redshift. Now, to put this in perspective, the clusters that CBI is using as images to do their Sinyavsky-Dovich Hubble constant work, you know, so basically these are things that they say they are detecting quite cleanly and doing lots of interesting things with them, are these triangles down here. So you can see that in the range of about 10 to the 15, these are massive clusters. These are things with names, like Abel, and you know, these are known objects. And even out at redshift of a half, things that are 10 to the 15 solar masses are famous objects. So if it's non-Gaussianity, if there just happens to be an extra dot in their map that's a little bit bright, that dot is about to become very famous. But they've looked for dots, and they don't see any super bright dots in there. So what that tells you is that this is not a non-Gaussianity issue. It's not some intrinsic feature of the distribution of the Sinyavsky-Dovich effect that it can just happen to scatter up there. But what's also interesting is that people have tried to calibrate exactly how much non-Gaussianity there is with simulations, say. But with all of the contribution to the variance in the non-Gaussianity coming from such huge masses, you really have to make sure that you have a huge volume. You have to make sure you have a big enough volume that you have simulated a universe that has a few of these objects in them. So for perspective, for the old concordance cosmology, sigma eta 0.9 or something like that, at around 2 × 10^15 solar masses, so right about here, in a 100 cubic megaparsec box, you'd be lucky to get one cluster in this range up here, which means that you really can't be calibrating any of these things numerically using simulation volumes that are not several hundred megaparsecs on a side, at least. So for perspective, so 10^15 solar masses, so if you're calibrating this thing numerically, you're probably going to have finite box limits around here somewhere, so you're going to be missing something like half of your non-Gaussianity. You could also say, well, would we see these objects any other way? Would we see them in through their X-ray luminosity or their Sinyavsky-Dovich flux or something like that? So these are just lines of constant. So red is Sinyavsky-Dovich flux. This thing you can't see right here is X-ray flux. But basically, almost all of your non-Gaussianity would be ruled out before you even started. That if there were objects up here, they would be known in X-ray catalogs. If you type the coordinates of the CBI fields into NED, which is this extragalactic database, there are no clusters known in their fields. And the fact that there are no clusters known means that there is nothing out here. So it's not non-Gaussianity. Now, I don't know what it is, but this, to me, highlights the challenges that we're facing here, and that so it's great to say that you expect some amount of power. So you run some simulations or you do some calculations, and and then you find out, okay, oh wait, my box wasn't big enough. I'm missing the things that are adding all this extra power out here. But it turns out that that's not the problem. The real problem is that when someone chose to look at this field, they said, oh, we'd better not look there. There's this huge cluster there. Let's look over there instead. And you can't quantify that, right? So you have to get in on the ground floor, and at the very start of the selection of these things, if what you care about is characterizing large-scale structure, you have to really work hard to know what went into the selection of the fields they looked at. So I think it's going to make it very difficult. People have to work very closely with the people actually taking the data. And so Dick is doing this at CETA, but it makes it very hard for people like us that are not working directly with the data. So the implication, well, if there's no massive cluster in your map, then the map's probably not very non-Gaussian. That's the bottom line of this. So to drive this home, what I did is I took about 500 realizations of CMB skies with these clusters added in. And what I did is I sort of mimicked something like the CBI observing scheme, which is just you sort of hit it with some attenuation pattern, you difference them. So I didn't add any detector noise. I just used circular cluster profiles because I was doing this for a different reason. Using n-body initial conditions where I had something like 8 independent volumes, about 256 cubed megaparsecs. So should be fine that the sample variance is not a huge problem. And then what I said is at L of about 2,500, what is the scatter in the points? So you can see the scatter is quite large, right? So the mean is somewhere down here. And you can see the scatters up here, a factor of 2 in the temperature, which is a factor of 4 in the power. And the Gaussian expectation is something like this. So you can see the Gaussian expectation isn't so far off, right? The Gauss, probably the real variance of this, by eye, the real variance is probably out here somewhere. And that's roughly what you would expect from, if you say they, you pick a field and you lop off all the brightest objects in there. But then you say, wow, what's that thing up there? So if, 1 in 500 is way up there, and, 3 in 500 or at least a factor of 2, so you can say, oh, well, maybe it's just a 2 sigma scatter up that way. Well, here are 3 random maps. So so in the ensemble, here's that outlier at the top. Here's the brightest single field, And then here are the two that are sequentially on either side of it in this stream of realizations. So I think it's pretty clear from this map that if there is a big outlier, it's because there's a huge object just sitting right there. And if you don't see a big object like that, then you're not getting a scatter up. So conclusions. There are curious goings-on at the small-scale frontier. And luckily, there's new data coming soon from new experiments that are going to be orders of magnitude, well, at least one order of magnitude, more sensitive. And it will definitively answer all these questions of what's going on. So it's not easily explained by the Sinyaev-Zaldovich effect, in my opinion, at least. So it's certainly not non-Gaussianity. It's not just some weird fluke of the data that's unique to this being a point process. So if it's not just noise fluctuations, and it's only about 2 sigma, and most of that, I think, is noise at this point, then what could it be? You should keep in mind that this is comparable in significance to the quadrupole, low quadrupole. So it doesn't say anything about horizon size physics, so in that sense it's less interesting to some people, but it is a curious anomaly that will only get more interesting. Thanks.